Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Clear Eyes, Full Hearts, a podcast presentation of Black Barrel Media and Ritual Productions. This is an episode-by-episode look at the award-winning TV show Friday Night Lights, created by Peter Berg. I'm Stacey Oristano. I played Mindy Collette Riggins.
And I'm Derek Phillips, and I played Billy Riggins.
The assumption is that you, our listeners, have already watched the show.
But if you haven't already, go watch Friday Night Lights, which is currently streaming on Netflix and Peacock TV, because there will be spoilers in our podcast.
If you want to support our show, subscribe for free to our new YouTube channel where you can access exclusive content. We have a YouTube handle that makes it easy to find us. That's youtube.com/@clear eyes full hearts. Also, we are continuing to release new episodes of the podcast every other week.
That's right. So join us as we recap all your favorite episodes and chat with amazing guests.
And answer your questions. Everything you want to know, write us at ClearEyesFullHeartsPod@gmail.com. Today, we are talking about season 4, episode 8, Toilet Bowl. It was written by Derek Santos Olson and directed by Michael Waxman. The synopsis from NBC reads, "The Lions play the worst team in the league, leading people to dub the match the Toilet Bowl, and Tim makes a bad decision while trying to help Luke."
We have a fantastic guest joining us today, Jeremy Sumpter, a.k.a. J.D. McCoy. But before we chat with Jeremy, let's recap this episode.
Not that anybody cares, but we have the league's two last place teams squaring off. Slam and Sammy Mead does not mince words. Ever.
I care about the toilet bowl. This is actually kind of funny because my father has been using the term the Kohler toilet bowl to describe crappy bowl games for years. So I'm glad that FNL finally picked up on this trend. This is also feels like the first time that we've seen Buddy Garrity in like two or three episodes. Am I crazy?
Yeah, maybe. Or he pops in for just a hot second, a little Buddy cameo.
Yeah, we haven't seen Buddy around. I miss me some Buddy Garrity. I'm glad to see his face. You know, we see Buddy at the beginning of the episode as he's listening to Slam and Sammy Mead go off on the toilet bowl.
Toilet bowl. Luke, the camera pans down and there's a close-up shot on a pill bottle. And I know that I just watched Luke get hurt. Like my brain is going, oh God, Luke's going to get addicted to painkillers because it's canon. This is what happens in a movie or TV show when you see a close-up of a pill bottle, then they get addicted. To painkillers. It's like in a movie, if someone coughs in a movie, they're gonna die in the movie. It's Chekhov's gun.
Yes.
Is this what's happening?
You know, I can't remember, honest to God, if he does wind up getting like a painkiller addiction. I don't think he does. I could be wrong, but I know that he does make some dumb decisions in trying to acquire pain meds. You know, obviously those dumb decisions come courtesy of the advice of one Tim Riggins. I don't remember him having like a big, huge drug addiction.
Okay.
Maybe I'm crazy.
No, Luke's smarter than that.
Maybe that's why FNL's better than some of those other shows, because it doesn't always go right to the cliches. But I could be wrong.
Right. And we do close-up shots on stuff all the time. And so I read into it as like, oh no, but I forget. That's what FNL does, camera-wise.
I do think it's supposed to be a big deal that, like, you know, this guy's going to get meds from like this hack doctor.
He got real, real hurt in that fence too.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a part of me that's like, he does kind of need these meds. You know?
Yeah.
But it is something he needs to watch out for, make sure he doesn't get addicted. I can't remember, Stace.
Well, good, because I don't know. Okay, am I crazy? Or is that the same real estate agent from season one? Because I will fully admit I was too lazy to actually look it up.
You are not crazy. And I do actually know the answer to this one.
Yay!
Her name is Cindy Creekmore. She plays Missy Aubrey. And yes, she's the same real estate agent from the first season. She's also the same real estate agent that sells the Riggins brothers' Buddy Garrity's house.
That must be so fun for her because it had been, what, like 2 years? And then she gets the call like, hey, come in. She's like, great, I'll come back and do that part
again.
She may
be the only real estate agent in all of Dillon.
She seems to be the best, I would say.
She's definitely the best. I would say she's definitely the best. Yeah.
But just as an actress to get that call, you're like, oh, sure. That's fun.
Yeah, I love those. I've had that happen before too, where as an actor, like you shoot something in the first season of a show and then like 3 years later, they call you back and you're like, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Do you have the right number?
Yeah, exactly. You sure? Until you've actually shot the scenes, it does feel like, are you guys sure that this is?
This is Ashton Kutcher. Are you punking me? There seems to be what I would call an overstock of toilets in Dylan because they're just all over.
Yes. There's a lot of toilets coming out for the toilet bowl.
Did you remember there was one in front of your house for so long and we did a photo shoot with it?
A toilet?
Yes.
I don't remember.
Oh my God. I'm going to send you the pictures later. We did a whole photo shoot.
Oh, I think there was a toilet in the backyard that we used as like a bench.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I had a buddy of mine in college who had a toilet in his living room. Like not a working toilet, but another seat.
Like as a seat?
Yeah, just a little seat in the room.
I do not like that at all.
Usually it was filled with like empty beer cans and cigarette butts, but
absolutely not. Not a fan. Okay, guys, it's me, your local stick in the mud. And I am here to say, I see this trope on so many TV shows. I don't know anyone that went and did college tours and sat in on a class. And to be fair, I don't think I even know anyone that did college tours, but I'm assuming they happen. I know they happen.
I did college tours.
Did you?
Yes. My dad and I went on a college tour at University of Georgia. I went on a college tour at Baylor with my friend Amanda.
You did?
Yeah. Come on. I didn't sit on any classes, but I met the secretary at Baylor, who oddly enough, her last name is Kohler. We were just talking about the Kohler toilet bowl. Her name is Sue Kohler. She was the secretary at Baylor University's theater program. And she kind of ran the show behind the scenes. You know what I mean? Like she knew everything. And I remember my dad meeting her and being like, get in good with that Sue lady because she knows everything and she runs this place. And he was very right.
He was right.
But yeah, she gave us a tour of the theater because I was a future theater major at Baylor. And so, yeah, I got a tour.
I get the tours. I went to college in London, so I didn't go to London to tour.
Oh, fancy pants. We don't do tours in London.
I'm sure they do. I just wasn't rich enough to fly over there to do it.
Gotcha.
I met them. I did a thespian convention and I won a scholarship there for doing monologues. And I met the head of that school. And then later, because I was all set to go to TCU, I had my dorm room. I was with my best friends in my room. I was going to study photojournalism and theater. And then we got this call on my answering machine and it was the head of the department at University of Manchester. And his name was Robert Ely, E-L-I-E. But my dad and I listened to it five times being like, Robert Ely?
Wow.
That's weird. So like, essentially I didn't tour, but I guess I interviewed, whatever. Okay. But it's they go on a tour, they sit in a lecture class and then they answer the question in the class. Like, come on guys.
I love that moment just strictly because of the fact that we get to see a massive Julie eye roll to Tammy when Tammy answers the question in this.
Yeah.
Where are they? Boston College, I think, maybe?
Yeah, Boston College. Could they say BC? Yeah. I'm assuming Boston College.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Because in all the other tropes, it would be Julie, the very smart girl, answering the question because she knows the answer. So I do love that it was the mom.
Yeah.
But there's just a part of me. I did a little groan. I'm sorry. God, people are going to hate me.
Don't say that about yourself.
Don't say that. They already do. Okay. We all know Kitch loves to shorten. He does this in real life. He gives everybody a nickname. He'll shorten your name, your last name, or like when he talked about you call each other, like especially when you're playing hockey, you call each other by your numbers. Yeah. So Luke is 44. And when Tim called him fours, I freaking lost it. I thought it was hysterical.
Frankly, I'm a little upset because in real life, I never got a cool Kitch nickname.
You weren't D's?
No, he just calls me Billy.
He calls me Mins or Sis. I'm still Sis. Maybe he doesn't like you as much as he likes me. That's weird.
That's probably
Think
it.
About that.
Yeah. But both on and off the show, he just calls me Billy. Sometimes he calls me D.
Yeah, but everybody calls you D. Okay.
Maybe. All right.
Sorry.
That's an amazing story right there. I'm glad I shared that with everyone.
Okay. It actually really looks like Tammy and Julie are in Boston because it's just the brick walls and you can see the breath of the cold air coming out when they are walking.
It looks like they're in Boston because they are in Boston.
Oh, lucky.
I actually forgot that they shot all that stuff in Boston. I'm trying to think of all the places we shot outside of Austin, Texas. So we shot in New York. We shot in Boston.
Mexico.
Shot in Mexico. Did we actually shoot in Mexico?
I think so.
Shot in Philly.
Philly. Yeah.
We ever do California? Ever?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Yeah. Interesting.
This episode's like centered around toilet bowls. There's the toilet bowl, and then my toilet bowl is clogged. So I just, you're welcome for adding to the talk of toilet bowls.
Am I crazy, or did they cut a scene of you and I together in this episode?
They did.
They did?
And I don't remember what it was.
I think Billy comes home and he's like, hey, you know, don't worry. I'm here, blah, 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 blah. Because you were all worried that I was cheating on you.
Because I have a picture of me in that chair with a belly and you're like kneeling on me. Do you know what? Maybe it's in the other. If we watch it on Amazon, it might be on that. Because I remember that.
I watched this episode on Amazon. And
got cut.
Yeah. Either it got cut or maybe it was a different episode.
I'm going to post that picture up on Instagram so you guys can see what it is. Yeah. But we did. We had a little scene there. But this scene, I think it was my first Mins too from Tim. This was the first time Friday Night Lights had given me specifically anything a little bit serious to do. And I was giddy. I was so excited. It was like they were pulling me off the bench and I got to play with the team for the first time. And here the bench is me wearing no clothes and being ridiculous, which I love, but it was like they handed me a tiny bit of trust.
Yeah.
And it felt very good.
I thought it was a really solid scene, to be honest with you. I also think that, like, moving forward, that's why the writers honestly gave you better storylines. As writers, they would say, hey, you know, we got this idea. They give it to the actor. And then if the actor kind of nails it, then they just bring him back and have him do more stuff. Well done, dummy.
They tested me a little bit. They are so excited.
Yeah. And that's why I think you had so much material in the fifth season. Like, all that stuff with Becky.
Yeah.
I kind of lucked out because I had my chance at bat very early in the first season, you know?
Yeah, you had real, like serious storylines. I never have.
You got him in the fifth season. Took long enough, but yeah.
Thank you, Friday Night Lights. Okay, so we find out what it was that Calvin tells you he is into, and you are now running a chop shop. And I just want to say that last episode, you said I was the one who puts Tim in jail.
You are the one who puts Tim in jail. I created the chop shop to pay for your medical bills.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm having your baby.
Wow. You're not working. You're not doing anything. I'm the one who has to pay all of your medical bills. So I had to do some illegal stuff.
Literally sitting on a reclining chair.
While you're sitting there in your recliner complaining.
I pee and I sit.
Yeah, with your dumb robe on.
God, that belly was so big.
How was that belly to wear around?
It's very, very, very sweaty.
They were what?
I had a very sweaty stomach the entire time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They're not heavy at all, but it's very hot. I play a lot of pregnant people.
Do you?
Oh my God, I play a lot of pregnant people. Grays. I did Steel Magnolias for a really long time.
Interesting.
We used to say this about Matt Saracen, and now I'm going to say it about Landry. Give Landry a break.
I was watching this scene with him and Crucifictorious and just thinking, I need more Crucifictorious in my life. I just love the way that Jesse and Stephanie and Caleb all play off of each other. I'm not talking about them as musicians,
but
as actors, the way they play off each other. Their scenes, they're always just fun. You know what I mean?
Caleb hits that rim shot at the end.
Yes. They're just Raz and Jesse the whole entire time during that scene, you know, because he was supposed to have a date with Jess and Jess kind of broke off the date with him. It's comedy gold. I love those three.
The three
together.
Of them are very, very fun.
Yep.
I always forget that Caleb is in the show and then I see him and I get so happy.
Yeah, Caleb's gone on to have a pretty decent career.
Jesus, he's so good. I've wanted to know, because it seems like Vince and Jess have a past. And so now I know they've known each other since they were kids. So it's like the tiny little seeds that get dropped each episode. I feel like sometimes this podcast just turns into me saying how much I love my friends, but my God, I love Angela Renee so much.
She's great. I find myself doing the same thing. You know, it's just constant hero worship of all these other actors that I love on this show. I think that's why this podcast is enjoyable, because I really do love, I'm a fan of the show as much as I am a part of it, you know?
Well, I like when you talk about the show, you call it a love letter to the show, and that's what it's turned into.
Yeah.
Guys, if you want to hear bad stories about FNL, except for when I come in and I'm like the logic police.
Oh yeah, it's Stacey.
At least I have a purpose.
Oh, she didn't close her locker all the way. How did they get from point A to point B so fast? Shut up, Stacey.
Listen, I love the people. I don't love the action sometimes. Like, okay, so you went on college tours. Did you do interviews?
I don't think I ever actually did like an in-person interview.
Is it a thing that happens?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it does if you're going to like a really good school.
Like Harvard or Yale or something.
Yeah. Granted, you know, I wasn't as smart as Julie and I wasn't even close to getting into some of the schools that she applied to, but maybe like if you're getting into a really good school, they do in-person interviews. I never had an in-person interview. I did get waitlisted at Boston University.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't go.
I mean, I guess my interview was when I did my audition at the Thespian Convention and I talked to them then. I guess that was an interview.
Yeah, that's
but it was still like
interview.
You take your SATs, you write your essay, you write to each college. I thought like that was it. I didn't want to talk to somebody. Again, I have such a small town Texas view of what it is when people go to college that like maybe that's a thing that people do. I just don't know about it. Hmm.
I don't think it's a common thing.
Makes me feel a little bit better. Okay, Tim. Tim is going to help Luke get pills. And it was like, there's so much of it that I get in that Tim was probably in that position and knows what it's like to play through pain. And we have grown to love Tim Riggins so much, and he's been making really good choices. But I also think we need to remember that a Riggins is going to Riggs.
Riggins going to rig, you know?
Riggins going to Riggs. And it's like, oh, yeah. It's Tim.
So in the film and television business, like when you sign on to do a project, a lot of times, especially if it's a bigger film, they have you go in and basically get a physical done.
Yeah, you have to get insurance.
For insurance purposes, that you are up to snuff and you're not going to cost the production anything. And I remember the first time I ever had one of these, I went in and the doctor asks you a series of questions and they want the same answer. So they'll ask you, do you smoke? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes. And he looked at me and the look in his eyes was like, come on, buddy.
Just this ain't rocket science.
He goes, do you smoke? And I go, no, this is back when I smoked. Do you ride a motorcycle? I said, yes.
Nope.
He goes, come on, I'm going to ask you again. Do you ride a motorcycle? Oh, no, I don't. I don't ride a motorcycle. Thank you. So that's basically what the doctor did the first time I had my health insurance interview, basically. So it reminded me a little bit of that.
My first health insurance interview was I had a bunch of in-bed makeout kissing scenes in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I kid you not, all of the questions were, do you have any cold sores, open cold sores, herpes anywhere, like on your body, whatever. And I was like, first of all, my answer is no, but also my scene partner, his answers are going to have to be no. I was like, thank you. I would never even think about that, but it was a lot of questions about herpes.
Maybe it had nothing to do at all with the movie. The guy just has a little herpes fetish or something. Is that possible?
Oh my God.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just asking, Stacey. I don't know these things.
I am no longer the worst one on this podcast.
Okay. Well, let's move on.
I think we've talked about this before because I talk about it a lot in my life. Some of my favorite actors are child actors. I love watching them because they essentially play with reckless abandon. There's no consciousness of self. They haven't learned to be embarrassed about their bodies or the way they look or the way that they play. It is truthful. It is in the moment and it is joy. These kids that are playing Jess's little brothers are legitimately great actors.
It's funny that you say that because I was literally thinking the same exact thing while I was watching this scene. There's no insecurities. They aren't thinking about anything. They're just playing. It's also a great job by Michael Waxman, who directed this episode, to get that out of these kids. Because I think a lot of times what happens is the minute you realize that you're on camera as a kid, now you start trying to play up for the camera. What's the don't think of red elephants or whatever, or don't think of an elephant in the room? Mm-hmm. And it becomes the elephant in the room. There's that camera there. And then don't play to the camera, but now you're playing to the camera.
Be little kids and embarrass your big sister. And like, boy, did they do it. God,
it's so natural.
They were just legitimately good.
And it really is fun to watch. We're going to have Jeremy Sumpter on later in this episode. And we talked to Jeremy about that a little bit, about that idea of that playfulness. And
yeah, when you're a kid. Yeah. I sometimes, honestly, I forget and I will go back. I think I've said this on podcast too. It's why I teach children, because I remember in class that they say yes to everything. They're like, yeah, sure, I'll try that.
Yeah,
sure, I'll do this. Okay. I'm like, that's who I want to be as an actor.
As we get older, I think it's part of survival and part of living in a civilization is this idea that we have to edit some of the thoughts that come into our head and some of the thoughts that come into our brain. Otherwise, we'd be in very big trouble. But yeah, it's really fun to see that happen. You know, to see that in a little kid where they're not there editing themselves anymore. They're just there being themselves.
It's just always truthful too. It never looks fake. There's a little kid in a Geico commercial right now and he's the guy is spinning the plates and he's like, how come you're not spinning that one? And he like pushes up his glasses. And he's like, because I'm 4 and a half.
Yeah.
He's my favorite actor.
I remember
kidding.
Going into my grandfather's office when I was like 4 or 5 years old. And all of his secretaries grabbed me and they go, oh my God, you're so cute. And I went, I know, because I knew, because like everyone's always telling me, like, stop telling me I'm cute. I get it. You know?
Will you please send me pictures of you as a little kid?
Of course.
I can't picture it at all.
You can't picture me as a child?
No, I won't send it to anybody, but I need it.
Maybe you can post that on your Instagram.
I won't. I've learned my lesson not to post pictures of you.
You can post pictures of me when I was super cute as a child. You kidding me?
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I remember my grandfather being like, hey, when somebody gives you a compliment, you say, thank you. You don't say, I know. And that's one of those moments where you edit yourself. So now when people tell me I'm cute, I say, thank you. I don't say, I know.
Oh, I blush and say, no, I'm not, and run away. This was a surprise. surprising little speech by Julie. Good surprising to hear her talk about Dylan this way.
Yeah, I don't think I was expecting this. When we meet Julie in the first episode of the first season, it's obvious that she wants nothing to do with Dylan, Texas, nothing to do with football. She wants out of this podunk little town so badly. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of beautiful to see her have this change of heart, you know, where she's starting to realize some of the wonderful things about growing up in a small town. Great scene, FNL. Well done.
It makes up for the other one where she was in the classroom. Okay, again, I feel like part of this episode, like part of the reason for this episode was that we can't let Tim Riggins be too much of the good guy. He can't be the hero yet. Yeah. This kiss made me want to absolutely viscerally puke on my coffee table. I didn't know it was coming. I was ill-prepared for it. I hated everything about it.
This is the second time that this has happened too, that these two have kissed each other.
He gave in this time.
Yeah. I mean, I love the writers on our show, but it does feel like this is like square peg, round hole. You know what I mean? They're like trying to force the idea of these two being in a relationship down our throats as an audience. And I'm not digging it.
I'm not digging it at all.
Yeah.
I get we can find a reason he's caught up in the moment of the land and what his life is going to be. And she's supportive and the kiss or whatever. But oh God, it made me sick to my stomach. Because you know what, D?
What?
Riggins going to rigs.
Riggins going to rig.
Gross. Oh. So gross. I don't know why this hasn't happened before. Maybe it's good that it waited until now. Buddy Garrity is a natural on the radio. Like, so good.
Didn't Buddy and Coach have like a talk show or something at
one point? Yeah, but for a minute, and it was awful. But him like doing play-by-play, little color commentary, and then that commercial.
Brad Leland's really good at that kind of stuff, just in general. Yeah. We used to have an auction for a charity event, and Brad was always the guy, the auctioneer. He'd be up there doing his thing, doing his little Brad Leland thing. But I love that Buddy has made a deal with the local Spanish station called El Fuego. Also, if you look closely, you'll notice that Buddy's co-announcer, his play-by-play man or whatever, is none other than Patrick Massett, who's one of the illustrious writers on Friday Night Lights.
They're both so good at it.
Yeah, they're both great. I love that it's El Fuego. So like they have commercial breaks that are all in Spanish and that Buddy somehow finagled his way into this local Spanish station and got them to start broadcasting East Dillon Lions games.
You doing your Buddy Garrity impression right then was a little deja vu for me because I was on the phone with Brad Leland this morning. That's two Buddy Garrities that I've had. I've had a good Garrity day.
Buddy Garrity overload?
Not yet. I don't think I can have Buddy Garrity overload. I don't think it's a thing. I have to say, this is the first football game that I, as an audience member, have been invested in a while. And I don't know what it is. I don't know why I am. I'm in.
Yeah, I hear you. I think we're so used to the Dillon Panthers winning every season, like every game. It was like, it would come down to the nail biter and it's like, yeah, but they're going to win. With East Dillon, it's like, are they ever going to win? You know?
So I don't care.
How can you not care? You got to care.
I didn't before.
There's something really special about a team getting their first win when they've been losing. I'm a Dolphin fan and we had a season where we went 1-17, but out of all the games that the Dolphins have won over the years, that one game kind of stands out because had we not won that game, we would have gone like 0-16 that year, 0-15 that year. And so that one win was just like, we're not the worst team in football ever.
Yay, we're not the worst.
Yeah, yay, we're not the worst. I mean, it's an awful victory, but a victory nonetheless that you're just like, wow, thank you, God.
Derek, also second place, first loser. Put that on t-shirt.
If you're not first, you're last.
Oh, God. Showing you guys, chopping up cars. It's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to see it actually happen, like an actual dissection and piecing out of the car. God, there was a close-up shot of your hand, state champ ring, cutting up cars, and that like just diametrically opposed like what your life was to what your life is. It was like a FNL punch to the gut. Jesus.
Yeah. And none of that would be happening if it weren't for you. It's all your fault.
We were gonna end this episode on such a good note.
It's all your fault, Stacey. Billy had a life ahead of him, a career ahead of him, a future.
Did he though? Did he?
You ruined it. All right, guys, we got Jeremy Sumpter coming on, so stick around. We are delighted to have Jeremy Sumpter, a.k.a. J.D. McCoy, with us on the show today. Jeremy has a career spanning nearly 22 years in the business. He's been in such shows and movies as Frailty, Raising Dad, ER, Murphy's Dozen, Local Boys, Clubhouse, The Glades, Just a Dream, An American Crime, death and cremation, Soul Surfer, Into the Storm, Billionaire Ransom, and of course, as Peter Pan in the 2003 hit film, Peter Pan, opposite Jason Isaacs. Jeremy, thank you for taking the time to join us today.
No problem, guys.
I recently found out that you are married now and have a kid on the way. Congratulations.
This makes me feel very old.
It makes us feel very old. Yes. Because
I'm starting to feel old.
No, you shut your face. You shut your face, Jeremy Sumter.
You were 17 years old when we were doing Friday Night Lights. I was already in my 30s.
Were you 17 or were you 16 when you started?
17, near the end of 17 or 18. And I'll be 34 in about a week and a half.
Are you ready to be a dad?
I'm going to be dad of a little girl. And I've been told that I would be a great girl dad. So
girl dads are the best.
Awesome, her name's going to be Lucy Snow.
I love it.
Oh my God,
I
love her already.
And the reason why I said Lucy Snow, we're trying to find all the how names would roll off the tongue. And so the way I did that was I'd be like, Lucy Snow, I done told you. I'm like, it rolls.
Oh, it's really good.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. I'm living in Nashville. And so it just even more so, like, Lucy Snow, I told you, you shouldn't
Lucy
do that.
Snow. Lucy Snow. Get out of that whiskey, Lucy Snow.
You were born in California, though, right? But moved to Mount Sterling, Kentucky when you were 10 months old. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I was born in Carmel, California. My mom was a Russian linguist in the Air Force, and she worked at the bar on the side, and she met the bar drunk named Gary Sumter.
I love it.
And then they fell in love. They got married, had my twin sister and I, and she got out of the Air Force from a blood thing, and she wanted to move back to Kentucky to raise us. And then that's where my dad got sober, and then that's where I was raised for the first 10 years of my life. And then my dad was on a delivery. He worked for Emory Worldwide, and he heard this advertisement on the radio about IMTA. So he comes home and brings it all up, and we all go give it a shot, and I get picked to go, and I go through images out of Lexington and, you know, for modeling and acting. I didn't really want to do it because I didn't want to be a model. I'm like, am I going to have to go in my underwear? But then sure enough, I was the one that got picked. And so when I found out I was going to get picked, the only thing I could think about, I paused for a bit, looked at my dad, and I go, am I going to meet Sammy Sosa? Out of all the people I could think of, I go, am I going to meet Sammy Sosa?
Have you met Sammy Sosa yet?
Yeah, did you?
No, I have not met Sammy Sosa yet.
We need to get this taken care of immediately.
I mean, it's tangential, but do you remember that you, me, Derek, and Amy Teagarden did a commercial and we got to hang out with Jerome Bettis all day? So like,
That was fun.
Yeah. The bus. I'm glad you brought that up because wasn't that like the year or so after he won the Super Bowl?
Yes. And he had his Super Bowl ring, remember? Don't you remember he called me Short Bus, which I thought was...
He called you Short Bus.
I can't believe that didn't stick. We should have stuck with that.
Well, I mean, if Jerome Bettis gives you a name, then you got to stick with it.
Yeah, dude. I just remember his Super Bowl ring was so big that I could put two fingers into it, like to get it on my fingers. He's not that tall, but he's just solid.
He's the bus.
Yeah. So, dude, okay. So you're living in Kentucky. You wind up going on like a modeling search thing. You win the contest, essentially. And then...
Yep. And I get picked. I do some training for a few months. And then we had the convention in L.A., mm-hmm. And there's people all around the country from different schools that have gone there for the whole big convention. And it's where agents and managers come and they find, you know, fresh meat for the industry.
Gotcha.
Elijah Wood got started through IMTA, Sean William Scott, Ashton Kutcher, Eva Longoria, Katie Holmes, and Jeremy Sumter. But it happened to work out for me. And it doesn't work out very much for most, but hey, it's an opportunity and I took it and I ran with it. And then within the first year, I'm starring along Bill Paxton and Matt McConaughey and Frailty. And then you know, things just really started taking off. And then, of course, I booked Peter Pan and I was like the one out of 400,000 kids that auditioned, that sent in tapes for that movie and I got it.
Unbelievable. I think maybe my buddy Riley Smith might have gone through that same. Is it called IMTA?
Yeah, International Modeling and Talent Agency.
Yeah, I think Riley Smith, who's a friend of mine, went through the same thing. And they pick a lot of kids all around the country, but there's very few that actually have success stories like you guys have had. And Riley's gone pretty solid.
Doesn't mean you're not going on an adventure because I'll tell you what, the whole thing about it was just the experience, and for people around the country, they get to go out to LA, they get to get the shot at modeling, and you're doing your competitions, you're doing the runway stuff, you're doing acting, and it's great. And then you come out, you meet a manager. If you get a manager, great. You come out, you give a shot. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you. But I always tell people, I said, just because you didn't make it out here as an actor, doesn't mean you can't come out here and make it as a crew member. There's so many opportunities in film, and people feel like, and I think people just get missed because they think, oh, I didn't make it as an actor, I can't do this. But what if you're a great writer, or you find your niche in like go to film school and you find out where you belong and you still involve yourself in the industry and making movies? I think with that aspect, a lot of people are end up doing it, going through that, and then finding solid jobs in the industry, and it's great. So I think IMTA is an awesome thing.
Before we jump into FNL, what was it like when you found out you were going to be freaking Peter Pan in that movie?
Oh, man. So in Kentucky, I would run around the neighborhood with my buddies. I had like about seven or eight of my buddies in my neighborhood. And it was like a subdivision, right? And we all hang out every day at the school, go run around and come home from school, throw our backpacks down and go climb some cliffs and play in the creeks and stuff behind my house. And my dad found out that we were back there at these cliffs. So he thought, oh, okay, these small little cliffs. Little did he know, when he went in there and saw what we're doing, he followed us over there and he's like, oh my God. And then he looks up and sees me halfway up a 75-foot face. And I'm 8 years old, right? That's who I was. I was Peter Pan, so much so that I was known around the neighborhood by all the moms that every time they see us, they go, oh, there goes Peter Pan and his Lost Boys. So this opportunity came up and my mom was like, oh my God, you guys don't know. So my manager is like, Jeremy is Peter Pan. And so I go into the audition room and I'm like, hey guys, what's up? And they're like, oh, hey, Jeremy. So watch this. And then they're like, okay. And I started climbing through the door frame. And you know, when you're a kid, you climb up the door frame, and then I did a backflip off, and they're like, well, okay, let's not do any more of that. I said, okay. And then so they're like, Jeremy, you're going to do a British accent. And I'm like, nope. They're like, why not? I said, I don't feel like it. And they're like, okay. I did have an English girl. I did have an English girlfriend though once. And they're like, oh, really? What happened? I said, I broke up with her. They're like, why? Well, I found someone hotter. And then the director looks up at the guy and goes, God, tell me he can act. And then went to London for the second half of the audition process, and then France. And then that's where the director drew this picture of Peter Pan. And he goes, who is that? I said, oh, that's Peter Pan. He goes, no, it's Jeremy Sumpter. You're my Peter Pan. I'm like,
oh,
what?
My God.
And he dated it. Awesome. He dated it June 6, 2002. At my rap gift, he brings that picture up, and it was dated the day Jeremy rapped Peter Pan, June 6, 2003, an exact year.
Wow. Oh my God.
So that's crazy. It was just, it was epic. So when I found out I was playing Peter Pan, I was like, well, I'm just going to go play Jeremy Sumpter.
I will say that one of my fondest memories of you on set at Friday Night Lights is just, there was an energy that never kind of stopped. I remember both of us got in trouble with Nan Bernstein, who was the line producer on Friday Night Lights, because you were always punting footballs. I was always throwing footballs, you know, when we were out there on the field. And she eventually was like, if you're not in the scene, do not punt. Because, you know, we were kicking them and hitting cameras and lights and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, we're out there between takes and just like me and Taylor Kitsch. We were just kicking football, kicking field goals, throwing football. I was always hanging out with the football players. I mean, I hung out with the cast a little bit here and there, but mostly I was just hanging out with the football players and the cheerleaders. Yeah. And just
I remember you being
and
around the cheerleaders quite a bit when we were shooting.
You know, well,
that is one of the other memories I have. I'm like,
where's
Jeremy? I was a
17-year-old kid and there's some cute cheerleaders,
exactly.
Man.
Exactly. It was interesting because Jesse Plemons, who was also, I think, roughly the same age as you, is like
when
such an
started,
old soul. And I'm like, Jeremy is exactly who I would have been at 17 years old, like kicking footballs, talking to cheerleaders.
And that is just full of energy.
On that show, it's kind of like you forget that you're filming something. And so what happens is like, I mean, we had four or five, like there was like three or four Steadicams at all times where we're filming our stuff. Yeah. And it's like they do a rehearsal and they're like, okay, cool, we got it. Moving on. I'm like, what? There was nothing really rehearsed. You go there, you're prepared or you're not prepared. No matter what, it's going to come on camera. And so we go do our stuff and it's like, I'd run over and do this little play or do this little scene real quick. And then I go over there and they got it. And then I go back to playing football.
Now there were numerous times on that show where you were rolling and you didn't really even know that you were rolling.
I said that to everyone. They're like, what's it like working on Friday Night? I said, well, I don't know. I never really worked on it.
It felt that way for sure. I did have a question for you. Do you remember, I mean, was Friday Night Lights a straight offer for you or did you audition for it? Do you remember?
It was pretty much a straight offer. They really liked me. Okay, so originally I went in for Saracen, but I was too young, I guess. Wow. Yeah, and so, but they remembered me and I think they wanted to bring me back, put me on the show somewhere. But then J.D. McCoy happens and then they're like, okay, let's bring Jeremy in. So I go in there, I meet the producers again and I just gave them just a quick read and they're like, great. And then I was off to Austin.
Did you climb the door frame for your audition for Friday Night Lights
and do a backflip?
I did. Instead, I did a front flip. I got over my fear of doing front flips. So that's
it's just a staple for Jeremy Sumpter now.
I love it.
What did you know going in when you came in about JD and his family life and what you were going to be doing?
I felt like there's a little bit of that in my life too. It's like, you know, there's so much promise with this character. originally I was going to come in and do 3 or 4 episodes. Little did I know, I ended up doing like 23 episodes. But no, going in there, it's like, look, I had a father who's, you know, I'm his pride and joy. And it felt like he's living his life through me, you know? So I had to be the best. And my character was the best. And so Saracen got benched and J.D. McCoy steps in and he takes him all the way to the state game to the point where he failed at that because of all the pressure that was put on him. And, you know, his dad didn't let him live it down and stuff. And I remember filming that state game. We were filming at Longhorn Stadium where Texas Longhorns play. And I told him, I think it was like, wasn't that the last day of filming for the season?
I think so.
It was right up there. Yeah. If it wasn't the last.
Yeah, I think it was because I always wanted to like, I'd annoy the hell out of the producers and be like, hey, can I please go run that play? Let me go run that play. And they're like, you know, you got to take some hits. So finally at the end, they said, all right, Jeremy, we're going to let you take some hits.
This last hit, just in case you break your leg.
Yeah, so I took some real hits on that. You know, I mean, it's not as real as what they do. You know, these guys were massive. I remember
those guys were huge.
Speaking of taking some hits, we had D.W. Moffat on, who played your father, and he told us there was a scene where he basically physically assaulted you outside the Applebee's. Do you remember this scene at all?
Oh, yeah. He put me through the ringer on that. I told him, I said, go for it. You know, it was his father, your father's son, put, you know, and so that was that whole hard rain's going to fall, right?
Yes.
Episode.
Yeah, he said he got a hit in.
To the point where Kyle literally had to step in as Kyle and be like, all right, that's enough to like break this scene up because he was worried that DW was hurting you.
Exactly. I love working with Kyle Chandler. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Taylor Kitsch, one of the nicest people I met. And I've known Jesse a long time. I met Jesse a few times, hung out over there while he played guitar and things up. Well before even did Friday Night Lights. And then Amy Teagarden, we share the same agent. And everybody on that show was great. I love being there. They had their circle, just so you know. They had their circle. And it's kind of hard to break into that circle. But I know that Taylor Kitsch and Kyle Chandler, they just welcomed me with open arms, showed me around the ropes, showed me what it's like in Austin, showed me some cool spots. And I had a lot of fun making that show. For the first couple episodes, I was kind of like, you know, I'm a little sad here. I'm lonely. It's my first time. My first time actually leaving the state, going and doing a job where I don't have my parents with me.
Wow. You know?
And so a 17-year-old kid and I'm going and, you know, I'm playing a 17-year-old kid, but I was really a 17-year-old kid. It's still a job and it's an adult world. And and I went there and so I got there and I felt lonely, you know, so they would fly me back and forth, which was awesome. And because of that, I felt like, I don't need to fly me back and forth. I like being here. I really fit in. It was a lot of fun.
I was saying to somebody the other day, I was in Hawaii for work and I'm like hanging underwear up in my hotel room out to dry because I'd run out of underwear. It's like any kind of glamour that people think is involved in this business. It's kind of ridiculous, but
yeah, there's no glamour. That comes when, you know, during award season, you know, other than that, it's like a nine to five job and it's our job. And we work long hours. We work 12, 13 hours. I mean, I've done 4 movies over this last year. And I had one that just came out. I thought HBO Max Holiday Harmony, a Christmas movie. And we filmed that in Petaluma. And Brooke Shields plays my mother. And And Brooke is, you know, you talk about glamour. I mean, she's one of the most beautiful women ever, you know, to walk the earth, right?
Yeah.
So she knows about glamour. But no, she'll come in there in a sweat, work and does her job and stuff. And so what people see on the side is really not what you're seeing as it goes on. But what we do is for them. The thing that I've never lost sight of is, you know, I'm not an asshole. I mean, there was a couple of times in my career where I started to get a big head. My mom would be back into shape real fast. I had to humble myself and I did. It's because I realized that I remembered why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I want to be an actor. I want to be on that screen and I want people to go see me. And if it weren't for those people going to see me, I wouldn't have this job. So everything I do in this industry is thanks to those audience, because without an audience, you wouldn't be making movies.
Starting at such a young age, there's such 2 paths that a child star can do. And one is very, very dark. And the other is like what you're doing, where you know what you want and you're grateful and like gracious for the things that happen.
I would say that we walk a fine line in life. And what I mean is we're actually not walking a line. We have 1 foot on both sides of the line. Now, you got the side that you know is always going to be there or not. Depends on how far left you go. But it's like there's family, there's light, there's friendship, there's fun, there's work. All the good things in life is on that right side. But how can you go through life without wanting to peek on the other side of that fence to see what's there? And so you go test those waters. But then sometimes it could be so damaging that you never make it back to that line. Or if you do make it back to the line, you got a cloud over you the rest of your life. And so for a long time, I made sure I stayed on the right side of that line. But as I got a little older, I had to go drift and find out and experiment, you know, and luckily for me, Hollywood has a tendency to really try to pull you on that left side, you know? And being a kid actor and then growing up and having the weight of everything on your back, you're just kind of walking that line with a big, heavy backpack on.
Yeah. You've seemed to have managed to avoid a lot of those pitfalls that I think a lot of child actors fall into. And I think, you know, it's not just child actors, guys. It's just people in general, I think, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
People... It's not actors. I mean, there's singers. There's a model. Yeah, that's just the industry type stuff. But I mean, what I go through is what everybody goes through in life. I just happen to be an actor going through it.
Yeah, I think about, like, I went to a normal high school with normal kids. None of them were actors or famous or anything, but a lot of them turned out to be, not a lot of them, but some of them turned out to be punks, and some of them are great people, you know? I think that
exactly.
Just because, you know, you grew up in the limelight, you grew up a recognizable face, we have a tendency to go, oh, look, all these child actors are a mess, you know? And it's like, that's not true. It's not all child actors. It's just that small percentage of child actors that do have their lives are very public. And so we hear about it, you know, we don't hear about the success stories of a guy who's doing well.
Yeah. For me, it's like, I've always wanted to have a family, you know, I want to have my own family and I wanted to move back towards Kentucky and be what I am. Honestly, I'd never liked living in LA. I'd love LA, but I don't like living there. Cause I'm a country boy at heart, you know? And so COVID came, it opened the door for me to, and everybody to move the heck out of LA and go be where they want. And so I said, okay, my girl and I, we moved to Nashville and then I got married and now I'm about to have a kid. And I'm actually living the life that I've always wanted to, and I was always feared that I would never have.
That's
while
awesome,
being an actor. And so I got married and yet I have a kid on the way. I'm living in Nashville, but I've done 4 movies this year, you know? So it's worked out awesome. And
it's
I couldn't
perfect.
Be in a better spot.
We're still going to get you to meet Sammy Sosa, but other than that, it's perfect.
I'm super proud of you, man.
I do this for fans and I always make time for my fans and I always respect my fans. And no matter what, I'm never not genuine because that's what we do this for. So that's the mentality that I kind of try to stay with throughout my career.
Speaking of genuine, we are in season 4 now. And there are times that I have said, I want to punch Jody McCoy in the face. And I say this is a testament because I don't want to punch Jeremy Sumter. I love Jeremy Sumter, but I want to punch JD McCoy in the face. So, like, kudos
that was
to
fun.
You.
Yes.
That was fun where, you know, you felt for the kid and didn't like him at first because you're coming in and you're rooting for Saracen, but then you felt for him and you're like, Jesus. But then the next season, you turn around and he's like, he's his dad.
He went from being this likable kid with an overbearing father. And we as an audience felt for you. But then, like, as you said, by the time season 4 rolls around, you're like this privileged jerk that, like, Stacey and I constantly talk about how we want you to get punched in the mouth.
And that was Michael B. George's first season. And you know how I said, and he's on my character was a douche to him. And then the town split up in 2 districts and they went one way. But then the team that everyone's been rooting for the whole show is now the team that everyone hates.
Yeah.
Yep. It happened so fast.
It was JD McCoy that stayed with the Panthers. And it's like, I was the character that made you hate the Dillon Panthers.
It's true. And it's kind of crazy. I mean, you did a wonderful job with it because we had Jason Kadams on the show recently who was talking about there's a scene where they start booing Tammy at one of the pep rallies. It's amazing to think that, like, we were all such big Panther fans and then all of a sudden we hate the Panthers. And you kind of are the face of the Panthers at this point in time in season 4. You're a jerk to Saracen. You're a jerk to Luke. You're a jerk to Michael B. Jordan. Like, to Vince.
And my dad becoming even more of a jerk.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. But I mean, wonderful job. Which did you enjoy playing better?
Bushy-tailed
JD McCoy or the bully JD McCoy?
Well, it's fun to play a bully because I'm not a bully. In my movies, I was always the good kid. And then I played a Peter Pan. And so it was fun for me to step out of what I'm used to doing, which is kind of what JD McCoy was those first season. But to make that switch, it was like, I got to make people hate me. You know, what am I going to do here? Yeah. I got to make people like start to root for the other side of this town because all they've done is follow the Panthers. And now I'm like the leader of the Panthers behind my dad. And I'm supposed to make these fans that have followed the Panthers and loved them and every their story about, you know, and turn around and make them just like despise the Panthers. And so for me, that was fun to go from the character everyone fell for to the kind that everyone's just like, God, that guy's just a prick.
You did a wonderful job at it. I'll be honest with you. I personally have always found playing the bad guy being a little bit more fun. You know, I know as actors, we're not supposed to label our characters as bad guys.
I mean, look, there's black and white, there's heroes and there's villains. You know what I'm saying? It's like you're the white knight or you're the dark knight. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it gets kind of old to play the white knight. You know, I want to do what Gary Oldman does. Like, you love him and you hate him. You know what
but
I mean?
But you have that sweet angel face, so people just think you're going to be
well,
so
well, you should
good.
See what it looks like right now.
I looked at pictures, Jeremy. You're very grown up and handsome, and it freaked me out and made me feel old.
Oh, I was going to ask you what your favorite moments from Friday Night Lights were. If you had some favorite moments, some favorite memories, if you could share that
well,
with our audience.
My favorite thing about filming Friday Night Lights is the fact that I've always wanted to play football, but I was always so small in Kentucky. My mom would never let me play football. And to get the opportunity to go and be an actor, what I love to do, and then combine that with something I've always wanted to do, and by being a football player and being in that uniform, uniform for me was just like something that I'd never felt that before. I'd never put shoulder pads on. I never put football gear on. Never worn a football helmet, but I go and play football all the time. I have buddies, and I'm an athlete, an all-around athlete. But to be able to go there and do what I love while putting the football gear on and go out there and play some games, make some plays. And my favorite part was doing all that in that scrimmage game with the rain, where they put those rain machines out. I mean, it was brutally cold that night too. And they had these big rain machines over the whole field pretty much and just soaked us while we're out there doing that. But boy, was that fun, man.
You're the only actor we have had on the show who said they liked that. Everyone else talks about how much they hate the rain machine.
I think that that's what I remember most fondly about you though, Jeremy, is that energy that you brought to set.
It's
and that
all positive.
It was a positive, joyful, as you said, like Peter Pan-esque energy.
Yeah.
And I think that for some of us who are a little older, it was like, why is this kid so happy right now?
Wait.
Yeah, why does
4 o'clock in the morning? Why is he smiling like that?
Does this guy ever quit? Does this guy ever like run on empty?
No.
I'm glad that you've maintained that same vibe as you've aged. We could all probably learn a little something from you.
I think it's just the Peter Pan in me. It's like, you know, I've grown up, but yet deep down inside, I'm still that kid. And that's going to work wonders for when I have mine. So
I was just about
to say, that's what's going to make you a really great dad. That is it for season 4, episode 8.
But please join us next time for season 4, episode 9, entitled The Lights in Carroll Park. But until then, clear eyes.
Full hearts.
Cannot lose.
Clear Eyes, Full Hearts is a podcast presentation of Black Barrel Media and Ritual Productions.
Executive producers are Stacey Oristano and Derek Phillips, Chris and Mindy Wimmer for Black Barrel Media, and Steve Walters for Ritual Productions.
Our producer is Miranda Parham.
Send your questions to ClearEyesFullHeartsPod@gmail.com.
And follow us on social media. I'm on Instagram @StacyOristano.
And I'm also on Instagram @_DerekPhillips.
Check us out on YouTube and BlackBarrelMedia.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.